Hello and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm your host, Ron Reardon. I'm joined in the studio by our producer, Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee. How are you doing today?
I am doing great. I'm excited about today's show, packaging, right?
I am too. I mean, this is going to be superb. It really is. Well, you know, Lee, on Launch, we feature innovators and inventors and entrepreneurs, providing our listeners with the opportunity to learn from the successes and the failures of launching an idea and the journey that follows. This morning, we'll be featuring Henry Wachusen, the third of Integrated Development. But before we get started, Lee, could you thank today's sponsor?
Sure. Our sponsor today is Patents & More. Patents & More, protecting your innovation and connecting you to the resources you need for success.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Okay, today we're going to be talking to Henry Wachusen, and the title here is How to Determine the Right Packaging Set for Your Product Through Its Entire Life Cycle. You might not know this, Lee, but, you know, packaging can be the single greatest cost of a new product launch.
I would think that it's much higher than people think. I would imagine that most people getting in this, they're not paying much attention to it. But when they're in pretty deep, then they're like, oh, great, here's another big expense for me.
That's right. Well, you know, it can be a significant upfront investment. And understanding your packaging options and the associated cost are really key to having a smart launch. Well, Henry Wachusen, you know, is a package developer. His company is where'd it go here? Integrated Development. And you know, I first met Henry many years ago when he was president of the Inventors Club, and not too long after that, he gave a presentation on packaging that just blew me away. Okay, and I was like, I could really determine that Henry was really an expert in this field, but he should be because he's been developing packages for the last 35 years, and he's got over 30 packaging patents to his name. He works with both startup companies all the way up to Fortune 500 companies, and back in 2006 is when he started his own business, Integrated Development. And he provides independent package development in the marketplace, and he works with his clients with the material selection, the process, the design, the testing, the optimization, fulfillment, automation, and sourcing. So, Henry, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Ron. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's really, really going to be super. When people look at packaging, can they just use a stock package, or should they have them custom made?
Well, that's a great question. One of the things that I like to bring to the attention of inventors and entrepreneurs is that the package is not generally a single entity. It's a set of packaging. Sometimes stock packaging, depending on the product, is exactly what you need to use to get going because there's no tooling cost associated with stock packaging. However, stock packaging doesn't have any decoration on it. So you need to be able to put your brand, your identity, your information on the package. So, yes, I do recommend you search for stock packaging when you start. But still, you need to have something that identifies your product, like a label or a sleeve or something else. So there will be more than a single component. Maybe the primary component stock, but then a custom component as well.
Okay. So there's more than just one piece then?
Yes.
Okay. Because after listening to your presentation years ago, I always kind of inform inventors that they need to think not only about the packaging, but the packaging for the packaging.
Mm-hmm.
And how's it going to get shipped there?
That's right. If the packaging looks great when it leaves the factory and it's a mess when it hits the retail shelf, that's a problem.
That could be a big, big problem, that's for sure. So how does an entrepreneur find the best price for packages that they need to buy?
Well, I can tell you this is pretty challenging. Packaging is what I refer to as a design-build world. That is, the people who manufacture the packaging do the design work. So if you know exactly what you want in a package, then it's pretty easy. You go out and search for all the manufacturers that you can find, tell them exactly what you want, and let them bid on your packaging. And you'll invariably, if you work at it, you'll get very good pricing. However, most people don't know exactly what they want, and they don't know the processes involved to create it. So they'll take their package concept to a manufacturer who will recommend to them a package that the manufacturer can produce. Is it the most cost-effective package for the product, for the entrepreneur? Not necessarily, but it's the one that single manufacturer is most efficient at. So the challenge is to work with different manufacturers, or even better, independent package developers to shorten the time involved to get the right package for the product. And that's, in fact, why I'm in business today, because I saw this need in the marketplace for a place for inventors and entrepreneurs to go to get objective advice and counsel on package development.
Okay. It almost reminds me of the problem solution training that I received many years ago, that people say, I've got a suitcase, and the suitcase will solve your problem, but we've got to stuff your problem into our suitcase, okay? And so it's like, you know, the package folks that you were just talking about would have an assembly line that produces a particular package. Okay, you got a product, you know, we're going to squeeze your product into this packaging that we know we can produce right now.
Exactly right. That's a great way to explain it.
Yeah.
So do you think by contracting with somebody that's kind of independent and doesn't really have a dog in the fight regarding the type of packaging that they make, does that end up, you know, I'm sure you have to invest in using this kind of consultant, but in the end, it probably can save them a lot of money, I would think.
It can save them thousands of dollars, because one of the dirty little secrets of inventing and commercializing your invention is that in some cases the cost of the packaging and the tooling and everything involved can actually be greater, the greatest part of the startup cost for a new product.
Could it be more than the actual product?
It can be great deal more than the actual product.
Yeah, you were mentioning earlier about perfume, that when you look at the perfume bottle and the ribbon around the perfume and all this other stuff, that the contents it probably could be the cheapest, element of the total cost.
Yes, there are a variety of industries where clearly the package is worth more than the product. If you take the liquor and adult beverage market, the beer in the bottle is less expensive than the glass, the cap, the label, the basket carrier, and the case.
Right.
And for someone starting up, the investment in the tooling for the printing plates and the graphic development, machine setup and so forth can be pretty significant. And that's one of the things, one of my specialties is helping inventors and entrepreneurs understand where they get the best value at each point along the chain of growth that they expect to experience.
Yeah, you know, I send prospective inventors 41 questions where they can kind of evaluate, you know, their concept and everything. And part of what I talk to them about is, you know, the 1-to-5 ratio between manufactured package cost and the retail. It can be a real wake-up call for an inventor if they simply think about the cost of the invention, you know, or the product, and, you know, what it will sell for, and they don't factor in the packaging part
right.
of that.
But how could they even get an idea? I mean, there's no way, right? Like lay person, could they guesstimate how much the packaging would cost?
Yeah, what I do is I tell folks to go find a surrogate, something that's already in the marketplace that's similar to what they've got, packaged similar to what they were going to do, and see what the price is and divide by 5. And, you know, if it's out there selling commercially, it's probably meeting those ratios.
Uh-huh.
That is tough. The other thing is to go to people like Henry and say, okay, you know, what do you think the packaging cost is going to be on this?
Right. I would imagine, Henry, that you just at a glance can kind of give people a pretty good ballpark.
Well, I have some sense, although that's always very risky to pull numbers out of the air. Even for myself, because I work in so many different kinds of packaging. I don't know from day to day what the cost of a 6-inch piece of ribbon is, or a velveteen bag, or a plastic pillow pack. So I'll go and I'll do research using stock packaging prices, and talk to people who I know are purchasing packages. What's that cost? Or I'll send out requests to the vendors that I work with and support, and ask them to provide some budgetary numbers for me.
Right.
So it is a very big challenge how to get that. And again, understanding all the components, like that perfume bottle might have a tag on it that's printed on both sides and an unusual die cut shape. Those are this significant cost, and sometimes some of the smaller components of the package that people would just like to swag, but I don't recommend it.
Yeah, I mean, the key word in inventing and entrepreneurship is it depends, okay? Because data that was good a year ago,
right,
is things change.
The
price of paper, right. Manufacturing efficiencies, and so you got to go recheck. Like Henry says, you have a good idea, but you really need to check the numbers. Whenever I think about perfume bottles, when I was in college, I was taking calculus, and I was trying to figure out what in the world am I going to use this calculus for? Because why would I care about the volume of a donut? And then many years later, I met a fellow that was an engineer, and he says, well, when we design perfume bottles, and they say that the contents inside has got to be half an ounce, and this perfume bottle is a really strange shape. He says, we use calculus to figure out what the volume of the interior of that's going to be for the half ounce. I'm like, oh, there actually is a use for calculus.
Why didn't they tell me that originally?
That's right. So Henry, how does somebody find, a good supplier for their packages?
Well, packaging is made in batches, and the process to make 1,000 packages is much different than the process to make 100,000 or 1,000,000 packages in many cases. And so the very first thing that I would say to inventor is understand the quantity that you're going to buy. And because that there are suppliers out there who specialize in those quantities, and other suppliers who won't even return your phone calls if you suggest those are the quantities you want to buy. For me, it's the number one thing that I look for when I'm helping someone with their packages, is matching them up with suppliers who produce in the quantities that they want to buy. Now, over a period of time, as your volume grows, your quantity changes, and you should be aware that you will want to change suppliers as you move out of the sweet spot of one supplier, move into the sweet spot of another. You're going to be able to reduce your packaging costs significantly. So your loyalty to your supplier has to do with the quantity that you're buying. With that said, you simply have to go out and ask. Again, you have to identify the kind of packaging you want. Is it a folding carton? Is it a bottle? Is it a bag? A metal can? And then identify the manufacturers or distributor suppliers of those types of products, and talk to as many of them as you can. Give them as much information as you can, because the more information you give them, the better information you're going to get back.
Well, that sounds like it could be really time consuming. I mean, can an entrepreneur, an inventor, save a lot of time by coming to you, and since you already know these folks?
Certainly. I've been doing this for 35 years. I can shortcut that process tremendously. Again, that's my purpose in this business, is to help people cut through that. And I have clients, I have a variety of services that I offer, and I have clients that to just use the pieces that they need. They don't need, if I can do a full factory automation where we put the product into the package, close it and pack it in the corrugated case, or I can simply make a recommendation on a material or a supplier. So, you know, my job is to help people where they need help at the time they need it.
Okay. You know, I mentioned to you earlier that every time I go to Chick-fil-A and I get French fries, I think of you because of all the patents you've got. That's one of the patents, right?
For what?
It is.
The container.
There's a container for the
there is French fries? There's a paperboard container that Chick-fil-A uses for their waffle fries.
Right.
That is a package that I invented in back in the early 80s. And originally when I invented it, it was for a fast food chain called Burger Queen that no longer exists.
I remember that one.
Is that real?
Yeah, there used to be a Burger Queen. Yeah, I remember.
The Burger King and a Burger Queen.
Really?
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
And their struggle was they were using a French fry container, but it was not maintaining the portion very well. So this package was extremely easy to open. And the way it was created, only a certain number of fries could fit into it. It fit on the scoop that they were using. Quite a significant development in the day to make sure that all the aspects of it were going to work right in the restaurant. And over the years, we presented it to Chick-fil-A for their waffle fries when they were first introduced, and it just worked great, and it's been working great ever since. You know, that's 30 years now.
Is that kind of an anomaly that a package could last for that many years, or does that happen?
You know, Lee, that's a good observation. It is unusual for kind of a custom package of a very specific package like that to have a life of 30 years. But there are, of course, lots of examples of that, but usually they change.
Right.
The functionality, the attractiveness and the functionality together just give it that longevity.
That's amazing. So, Henry, what are the options for printing that an inventor would have?
Well, there are hundreds of different printing processes. It's a good question because each manufacturer usually focuses on one type of printing. Now, it depends on the substrate, of course. If you're printing on a plastic tub or you're a metal can or you're printing on paperboard. In the case of a paper, which is where most of the printing's done, they have typically options of offset printing or flexographic printing and gravure printing. And in labels, you have the same basic kind of printing options because they're paper as well. Each one has a different cost for the printing plates, which is something that you always have to be aware of, and the cost of processing and the cost of application. If I buy a litho printed label, that most likely will come in a sheet. So if I'm going to put those on my package, they have to be removed from the sheet by hand and placed on the package. If I buy a flexographically printed label, it may come in a roll, and then in that roll form, it's very easy to get a machine to apply that label to the package. So again, the printing process that I select may actually have to do with how I'm going to handle the package downstream. Nonetheless, the quality of reproduction is, you know, from the point of view of the inventor, is what they're looking for. They want to have the best presentation of their product, their logo, images of the product on the package, if necessary. I worked with a fellow just the other day, and developed a package for him where we moved him from lithographic printed cards on top of a bag to a flexographically printed bag. Very, very fine detail. And there was only a handful of manufacturers around the country who really could print the quality that he needed on the bag. But we found the right manufacturer for him, and now he's produced over 500,000 bags and it really improved his sales because of the perceived value of his product increased on the shelf because of this change.
And that's really important. I've heard that you've only got a couple of seconds when a prospective buyer of your product is, you know, walking by the shelf to really grab their attention and have them, you know, actually consider it, you know, for purchase and everything.
That's exactly right. It is about 3 seconds that you can count on that the consumer, if you're in the retail market, on a shelf, on a peg, in a traditional retail store, you have about 3 seconds for the consumer to see your product. And if it looks good, they may look a little longer. If it looks bad, they're going to move on.
Right.
Now, do you have any tips for somebody that's thinking about packaging? Like, what are some ways they kind of grab the person's attention to get them to stick around a little longer? Is there anything you've learned over the years that make a person linger and catches their eye a little bit? Are there colors, shapes that work better than others, or
that's a very good question. And as you can imagine, the consumer products companies, this is something that they study. There are so many things that affect how the package, the shelf presence of the package. Color is very important. But in many cases with a new product, and this is particularly true for inventors, they have something that's novel, and the consumer doesn't necessarily can't understand what it is instantaneously. So because it is novel, they've not seen it before. Yeah, that's the whole point. So now we have to come up with strategies for each product. Is how do we get them to read the package? Oftentimes, the package is so important to draw their attention. Maybe with a window, maybe with color, maybe with shape. Something there has to compel the consumer to stop and say, "Oh, this is something new. I want to learn about it." I can't say exactly what that component would be because I'd have to see the product.
Sure. Now, there was something you mentioned quite a bit, Ron, is that toothbrush that spins.
Right.
Like, how important was that in the packaging? If they had done that in a different way where you couldn't actually touch the toothbrush and press the button, see it spin, the sales probably would have been dramatically less.
Yeah, I was really amazed when I looked at the patent for that particular device that now Procter & Gamble owns, and it actually had the little hole in the packaging where it says, you know, "Try me," was one of the last claims, you know, of that particular thing. I'm like, they got a patent on a hole? Oh, my goodness. But, the rest of the patent had to do with the mechanics of how the spin brush worked and everything, but they actually snuck the packaging in there also.
But that's an example of packaging making or breaking a product.
A great example, exactly. And any time the package requires or the product has some motion that's not obvious like that. Of course, we don't expect toothbrushes to spin. So that's a great example just because of that. Because the consumer now is not in this mindset. They don't say, "Okay, that's a spinning toothbrush." They have to be drawn to it. And the "Try Me" is a technique that's often used in the new product world, for that purpose. Anytime you can put the physical product on display and have the packaging underneath the product. And you see this in retail stores sometimes. That's a strategy. That TryMe package is very expensive. Yeah. And customized thermoform packages with holes. I've got, if you're selling hundreds of millions of toothbrushes, then the development cost becomes a small percentage. But if you're, you know, an inventor coming out of the chute with a new product, that can be overwhelming. So sometimes the strategy is to build a point-of-purchase display that shows the features of the product and then make sure the product is underneath that display in a more cost-effective package. So a lot of different strategies.
Yeah, I was really impressed upon me the importance of packaging when my wife and I were at a store and they had this big clearance area. My wife really likes to go to anything that's on clearance, and you know, she looked for things that are 90% off. And I found a product in there that had gotten separated from its packaging. I mean, it had a price tag on it, and the price wasn't very much, and it's plastic, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, I don't know what this thing is. I don't know what it does. I mean, why would anybody buy this? I mean, I was totally clueless. You know, it's like, does this thing go on a grill? I mean, I couldn't figure. To this day, I have no idea what that product is.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and it's like if it had been some packaging with a label and you know how to use it, that would sure have been helpful. You know, I said I can see why this thing didn't sell. But you know. There's manufacturers for the product, and then there's manufacturers for the packaging. If a manufacturer for a product says, hey, I can do the packaging too, what would be your response to that?
My response would be fantastic. Please provide a quotation.
Okay.
It's a trust but verify kind of thing.
Absolutely. There are some manufacturers, some products that are manufactured, it makes sense that the product goes into the package at the time of manufacture of the product. There is an injection molded part, for instance, may have a couple of small assembly steps, and the injection molder may mold the parts and do the assembly right there. And then, if it's suitable, can put it directly in the package. That is a tremendous advantage from a cost point of view. Then it goes into the secondary package, into the package for the package, and it's potentially retail ready, leaving the manufacturer. In those cases, the manufacturer most likely has packaging suppliers, but there's never a reason to rely on them alone. You can send your packaging into the manufacturer. You can buy it and send it in if you want to use your own supply, if you find a better or a trusted supplier.
Okay. Well, if you get the invention manufactured, you got the packaging, you get it all packaged, and you're ready to go to the retailer, and then the retailer says, hey, I'd like to have a display. Is that part of the packaging, having a display?
Well, in the mind of the retailer, it is very often part of the packaging. It is, again, one of those things that someone first experienced selling product into the retail world can be blindsided by the shelf in a retail environment is coveted. And when you have a new product going into a retail establishment, the retailer may not want to risk putting your product on the shelf. Because he has to take something else off the shelf that's already selling, has a known return. Your product, being new, doesn't have a known return. So that oftentimes to get into the retailer, they want to have some sort of standalone display, which they want you to provide to them. And so I counsel my clients that when we develop the package, we should also develop the display. Even if you only have it for presentation purposes, it lets the buyer know that you know what you're doing, that you understand what the buyer's needs are.
Okay. All right, that's cool. Now, a lot of products nowadays are sold over the Internet. If an entrepreneur has both Internet sales and a wholesale business, should they use the same package?
A great question. The retail package there is to entice the consumer to take that product off the shelf and put it in their cart. And investing in graphics and presentation to do that is, of course, very valuable. In the internet sale, the website has done the job of moving the product off of the site into the cart. And so it doesn't necessarily make good financial sense to take that use that same expensive package that you'd put on the retail shelf in your web business. However, that package is part of your brand. If your package is part of your brand building, you may want to do that. In the internet business, the package most likely goes through the single parcel distribution system, FedEx, UPS, or U.S. Postal Service. So now you have to be concerned about protection, and those systems are very rough. Each of those shippers have testing protocol that your package must pass in order to be available to make claims against the shipper in case there's damage. And those tests are very rigorous. That's part of what I do, is help my clients and get all the testing done so that the package can be certified for whatever shipping method they want to use. But it is completely different than the distribution system of a package that's going to go into a retail environment that would be in a case, on a pallet, shipped in a truck and put on the shelf by someone who's physically stocking it.
Yeah, I've heard that those people that you just mentioned, as far as shipping, that sometimes in their conveyor belts, there's actually a drop of a certain number of feet where the packages are moving, and kaboom, you know, they drop a certain number of feet, you know, as they are moving along.
Absolutely, and that certain number of feet can be up to 8 feet of a vertical drop, and they have various chutes. Anytime you get an opportunity to tour a package distribution center like a UPS or a FedEx, I would recommend it. It is absolutely fascinating how they move packages and the speed they move packages and distribute them. They also drop packages down chutes that are accumulated and then loaded on the trucks. But your package, your nice, beautiful little lightweight package, I say, isn't going to be affected by a drop. Might be followed down the chute by something very heavy and ugly that could do some significant damage to it, just by the impact. So there are a lot of different ways.
Boy, that's almost like a gorilla tossing things around.
Of course, that's the image that people use, and it's an appropriate image.
Okay. Well, what does an entrepreneur need to know to manage their packaging cost?
Well, the first thing that I would say to them is that they need to be aware that the tooling, the startup cost of any package can be significant. And as they go starting to sell their product in the market, they'll find that different customers may ask them to change their package. So now they've invested thousands of dollars in printing plates and cutting dies and injection mold tools and so forth. And someone says, "Well, I'll buy it if you change all of that." It's pretty significant. So doing your research up front, understanding who your customer is and what they're expecting is very valuable. Number two, as your volume grows, the opportunities to reduce your packaging cost are very significant. So you need to not only look at what your packaging is going to be today, but what is it? What are your projections a year from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, and understand how those packaging volumes are going to be able to affect your cost.
Okay. Well, you know, I've heard it said quite frequently that inventors and entrepreneurs seriously underestimate how much time it will take to get a product to market and how much it's going to cost. And they're probably not thinking about the packaging cost as a significant part of that.
I would say, sir, you're absolutely right. I have, over the years, done quite a bit of work with the product modification for package purposes. So I would strongly suggest that the inventor start thinking about the package right off the bat, because there are things that you can do with the product itself which will have a dramatic impact on the cost and effectiveness of the package.
Okay. Well, how can our listeners get in touch with you, Henry?
Well, they should feel free to call me at 770-401-6015. I'm about 2 weeks away from having my website refurbished and up, and that is www.integrateddevelopmentllc.com.
Okay, that sounds super. Well, thanks for being on our show today, Henry. Our listeners have gotten some great nuggets and learnings that they can use in their launch and their journey. Another great show, Lee.
Sure, and don't forget, a special thanks to today's sponsor, Patents & More, creating the currency of innovation since 2002.
And tune in each week at this same time to listen live, or go to our website at thelaunchhour.businessradiox.com to listen at your convenience. Until next week, I'm Ron Reardon with our producer, Lee Cantor, signing off another great session of Launch.